Greetings, Sleepy Salsa here on this Saturday, December 8th of 2012, and welcome to the 70th episode of the Last Bastille podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicizes a Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bose's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NC SA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille. Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. TheLastBastille.wordpress.com. And for this episode, we're going to be not really addressing dissident philosophy at all. Instead, we're going to be looking at dissident methodology. That is a critical examination of what methods don't work, those that do, and others which are experimental. And for this particular episode, I'm going to read you an article that was originally published on the blog back on July 12th, earlier this year, that is entitled Alternative Media. People are ready to hear the truth. At the very least, they are willing to consider more varied perspectives in order to overcome the six blind men and the elephant problem. User-generated content thus far has exploded the capabilities of political dissidents than just about any other methodology up to this time. The alternative media sprang up as a reaction towards the dying dinosaur corporate whore mainstream media, or MSM. Corporatist reporters began complaining about the stories that bloggers began to break. Open source intelligence gathering and dissemination was the exact kind of workaround that dissidents, and even those of the mainline public, could use to discover, evaluate, and act on information that they otherwise would never have heard from CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and the rest of the mass media cartel. As I mentioned in my last documentary, Jamming Culture, Creating Guerrilla Media, which is now only available through SneakerNet, there are four communications mediums: written, audio, video, and in-person or live. The first three are different from the last one, since they are all dead types of open-source intelligence gathering, or sharing, in that you cannot converse with your intel source. Bloggers write posts, podcasters record broadcasts, and videographers shoot footage. Vloggers, by contrast, just sit in front of their webcams and rant because they were too lazy to write anything or acquire their own RSS feed. While it may be possible to record something live, such as a speech, if you weren't there and you clap or boo the speaker, it won't make it into the recording simply due to the fact that you weren't there. Duh. It would behoove every single political dissident to be familiar with each medium and eventually decide to specialize in one of them. The technological advances made have given true power to the multitude of alternative media outlets. Video press releases are now common, especially over at YouTube and Vimeo. Some blogs allow podcasts to be hosted on the same RSS feed as the posts are. Blog Talk Radio has provided the ability for live streams to take callers over both normal phone lines and VoIP, and then those streams are rendered into free downloadable podcasts. Video conferencing has exploded to the point where entire interviews are now possible for public viewing on video sharing websites. Simulcasting is now a household term. CGI graphics of the quality that the MSM cable news channels use are available to the consumer at affordable prices, or sometimes as shareware or even freeware. The quality content available through various alternative media sources blows the MSM out of the water. When there are disagreements, they tend to be fundamentally serious when the individuals involved possess truly contrasting political orientations. Accuracy in reporting breaking news has begun to revitalize the discipline of journalism. James Corbett, Matt Drudge, Wayne Madsen, and other truly investigative reporters are bringing to the table, those pertinent subjects that have been deliberately ignored or even censored by the corporatist media. That being said, the alternative media is experiencing some serious growing pains. While there are several news aggregators, there is no reliable way of verifying each and every claim that comes down the pike. Distinguishing between what is reliable open-source intelligence and what is simply rumor is so sloppily done that unfortunately a deluge of data simply falls to the cracks, all of which is assumed to be true and correct. It is not at all uncommon for emotions to run so high that rationality goes out the door when the contending parties prefer to bicker endlessly with each other, utilizing trial by press instead of trial by jury, thereby causing internal balkanization. Patriot rock stars and messianic figureheads abound, forming dedicated fan bases of the easily swayed without difficulty. Fake-triots and patriot-tards are some of the common terms of derision used to describe controlled opposition and useful idiots, respectively. Despite these serious internal problems, if they can be overcome, then victory against the establishment becomes realistically possible. Otherwise, the alternative media would be filled with nothing but hobbyists who spend their leisure time pretending to be revolutionaries, much like Dungeons and Dragons role players, that is, having a video game mentality. If you ever happen to pay attention, you would notice that most of the alternative media is currently ineffective because all they do is act as watchdogs, necessarily entailing a function I've called news and analysis, and neglect to brainstorm like think tank analysts, which I refer to as the problem-solving stuff. Most of the alternative media prefers to whine and bitch all day about the 20 millionth awful thing the establishment did this week. But when it comes to actually trying to solve it, or at least use a temporary expedient, they spend all of 5 minutes on methods that have historically proven themselves to never work. Everyone else who still clings to reason and evidence are either vilified or ignored out of existence, and then the alternative media figureheads wonder why nothing they've pushed thus far moves the case for liberty forward. The potential of what the alternative media can be and do is so amazing that people who get bogged down in the carnival of distractions is really nothing short of heartbreaking. Watch all that skill and talent just being wasted on either the same old redundant shit, or worse, focused on something that necessarily requires an ineffective method to work, is quite beyond frustrating. What needs to happen is for people to cross that line where they understand that there is no way to work within the system. You cannot negotiate with dedicated psychopathic control freaks. By empirically demonstrating that certain methods simply do not work, such as voting, petitioning, writing congressman letters, and so on, perhaps it is possible to cut the learning curve a hell of a lot shorter, thereby saving dissidents the time, effort, and anguish in eventually determining that you cannot make a square wheel roll. What I greatly fear is the alternative media degenerating into an internet version of the mainstream media. The alternative media began during the 80s and 90s through newsletters, fax distribution networks, and eventually the internet. I'll be damned if the enemy propagandists and their behavioral eugenicist mad scientists are going to corrupt our personnel, in addition to trying to control and regulate the web. Besides needing a backup and/or alternative internet, what we also really need right now is some sort of truly private, non-corporate, third-party arbitrator who can resolve disputes between those who utilize communication mediums over the internet, so as to finally put an end to this internal slander, defamation, and libel once and for all. It is time to separate the wheat from the chaff and ostracize those who seek to harm our own people. It is time we take back our alternative media from the shit-stirring infiltrators who have instigated discord within our ranks. It is time to finally use the internet to truly revive the discipline of journalism and to use that to its maximum utility as a part of the overall effort in securing our liberties. And again, that was the article on the alternative media. And now for a postscript. You know, I must say that that there's a lot of good that the alternative media can offer and still does, as well as its track record to consider as well. And how digital technology is advancing at such a pace where it is enabling open source data, again, whether written, audio, or video, to be spread globally, that it really is the best workaround of the oligopolized media here in the States than really just about anything else. It's just quite amazing. And, you know, I get a lot of flack for criticizing the alternative media as much as I do. But that's only because I'm part of the real alternative media. That is that combination of citizen journalism mixed in with political dissension. And obviously a few other functions, but those are the two most easily identifiable ones. And so whenever it comes down to... And so, yes, I mean, for example, if you refer to... episode 60, I mean, you know, you folks already know that I have no love for the corporate for the corporatist mainstream media. You know, the corporate whore media is just filled to the brim with nothing but Madison Avenue socially engineered Barbie dolls. And so, it's painful for me to hear folks to claim that I hate the alternative media because I criticize it as much as I do. And I don't, not at all. In fact, I'm, in many ways, I guess you could say I'm very much in love with the alternative media. Just as you would, like a spouse that you've been married to for a good long time, and you know, and you still are in love with them very much so, but it's kind of taken on more of that adult, calm love, if you will, specifically, although, you know, you still have your fun, so it's off and on, and I think you know what I mean, but, you know, the frosting on the cake. But now you understand that the cake itself is also important, too. The substance, not just the glitz and glamour. And it's very... and so what that also means is that you're also very painfully aware of all the flaws, which, just unlike any stable marriage, you would know that about your spouse. And... you know, if your spouse was ever injured or somehow became institutionalized or has some sort of life-changing, for the worse, event happened to them, you would, of course, I mean, you can't just ignore that. I mean, it's so traumatic that... you know, if your spouse got cancer or something, and they're in serious danger of death, like, immediately, or way too soon, much more, you know, much more on the sooner side than you would have hoped, because you wanted to have a nice long life with them, that it's really, I'm even having tough words to describe you, to try and lay out this metaphor. But it's a slow death, and it's painful because you have to, because as opposed to a quick death or something of that nature, you have to watch the degradation and really the death of the soul in the process. Much like any parent, excuse me, much like any adult child taking care of their aging adult parent would notice the effects of something like Alzheimer's disease or dementia or something of that nature. And so it is here, you know, vis-a-vis the alternative media. Now, the alternative media is still vibrant enough that it can bounce back and become healthier and more vibrant and vigor than ever before. And it definitely has that capability of doing that, no doubt about it. But the cancer has to be cut out and permanently. You know, it can't, some of it cannot be left to regrow, because if it does, it will end up killing the host. And like I said in the article, my fear that it becomes an internet version of the mainstream media. That's basically the cancer killing the host, and at that point, it might as well be the corporate media. So it kind of begs the question then, what exactly is the cancer? What exactly is eating it? And unfortunately, there are different types of phenomenon all doing it. And it's interesting too, because it's very much like, and I believe I said this in my postscript for the last episode, where the alternative media is a lot like the free market. In fact, actually, in many ways, the alternative media is an aspect of the free market, but very similar to, if you compare the alternative media and the mainstream media, and again, with a parallel comparison of the free market to the corporatist oligopolies, you know, one is a cancer on the productivity of the other. And in fact, actually, the relationship between the alternative media and the mainstream media is actually exactly that between the free market and the corporate oligopoly. It's just one specific industry. It's one specific area. So what it really comes down to then is just simply that one is killing the other. It is. And the cancer, the parasite, only can do that because it's been given leeway by government. Now, in the parallel metaphor with the alternative vis-a-vis corporate whore media, there is government privilege with the one and that sort of thing. However, it's not just from that direction. There's also kind of a internal rot, too. And it's the very worst aspects. I don't know what the equivalent with the free market would be. There probably is. But basically, the only way that I figured out how, and other people have tried to describe it as best they can, they've got their own terms for it. But there was one man who actually came up with the term, and I've been able to use that term with his permission to describe the same phenomenon. But he got it exactly right. And the term is perfect. It really is, because it really gets to the meat of the bones of the thing, is that it's the carnival of distractions, which was the subject of the last episode, that is eating out the alternative media. So imagine you have your spouse is like this 20-something-year-old beauty and is the utmost of not just physical perfection like in a Randian novel, but, you know, mentally acute and also of good, strong character as well. They're morally sound, as the Boy Scouts would say. And next thing you know, they're being cut down even before their prime. I mean, they're on their way up. They're not at their prime yet, but they're on their way up, and they're being cut down even before they get there. I mean, the enemy hates the enemy hates us so much they don't even want us to get even close to our prime. I mean, that's how, because they recognize the potential that's there. And keep in mind, it's not just in terms of technology, even though that's kind of a big focus, and like in the article I pointed out, but that's not the only thing that's going on. Because the technology, that's more based on style. It's how you present the data. But then you also have to consider substance, the actual data itself. And the real, you know, historical research and citizen journalism and political dissent activities, all three, are really just, if anything, that's the trifecta. That's the foundational basis for the alternative media. I mean, perhaps there are more, but those are just the ones that kind of keep popping up most commonly. And also there's the, you know, low barrier of entry. Anybody can publish a blog, anybody can report a podcast, anybody can shoot a video, etc. again, the user-generated content aspect. And, you know, even before the internet, you know, the fax distribution networks and the newsletters and so on and so forth were quite effective for what they were. But then the internet put it on steroids. Now you can do, now radio is a lot easier. And then there's the additional capability of everything, of anything and everything to do with video, which is where most of the advances seem to be really be pushing. And so, yeah, there are the technological advances, you know, to be sure. And of course, you know, that's a two-edged sword, because then you have the problem of, because YouTube said so, which I'll say for another time. However, it is what it is, isn't it? Because where else would you learn about, you know, Richard McDonald and state citizenship? You know, where else would you learn about, well, I don't want to say that, but where else would you learn about the ratifying conventions? Where else would you, you know, of the 1780s? Where else would you, hell, would you even just learn basic privacy techniques? The corporate media doesn't have any interest at all in discussing those things. And the closest they would come to is that, and I've heard this a few times, is they would pervert what was actually going on in the during the ratifying conventions, and then just cite the government line of basically the fact that it's the other way around. And of course, I don't want to get too deeply into that, because that would be that's a topic unto itself. But suffice it to say, there are certain subjects that would never have been broached had it not been for the alternative media. Even the crappy, stupid stuff that would belong in the carnival. Again, Nibiru, again, the examples I like to use would be Nibiru, the Anunnaki, reptilians, etc. You know, even that would not be broached. But I think the problem, especially when it comes in terms of substance, is that, again, there's no filtering. There's not really a clearinghouse. The closest to this, kind of, but not really, are that there are certain websites that are news aggregators. So they pull material from a lot of different sources, blogs and other types of sites and whatnot. Like the Drudge Report, for example. Yet, that's not the same thing as a clearinghouse, where the main function is basically verifying and debunking. Or as Mark Dice would say, separating the fact from the fiction. So yeah, news aggregators are important, but I would say what is equally important are clearinghouses. And last time I checked, there are hardly any. Even if there are those that dedicate themselves to that single, I would say, pivotally crucial function, they're not very well known. The news aggregators are well known, but the news aggregators a lot of times are the very sources responsible, or the very, you know, secondary and tertiary sources responsible for a lot of stuff falling through the cracks. And then some people take some of the stuff that falls through the cracks as gospel from the news aggregators. So I'm not saying the news aggregators need to verify their stuff necessarily, but what I am saying is that, because all the news aggregators do, they just fling spaghetti at a wall and see what sticks. The clearinghouses really need to double check a lot of what the aggregators are doing, and so they can counterbalance each other. I can definitely see that happening, but there's not a serious move to do that as of yet in any real way in terms of trends. There are individual efforts, of course. I'm definitely doing that. Hell, if you don't believe me, read the book report I did on Thomas Woods's nullification book, and you'll see what I mean. And just to kind of pique your interest, you'll go read that. Basically, the book is a load of shit, and it pains me to say that, but basically he's promoting a method that inherently does not work. Anybody who criticizes him is a supposedly a corporate whore, you know, pundit. And never somebody in the alternative media who actually seriously considers what he says agrees with pretty much most of it, except in terms of, like, I don't know, effectiveness and, the fact that, the method itself, will not work. Because, well, for a lot of reasons, but again, that's a subject unto itself. The point is, there really needs to be the free market has like a self-correcting is inherently self-correcting. Well, similarly, since the alternative media is a part of the free market, or at least I would like to think so, then it itself needs to be self-correcting too. And that is another of its major flaws right now. And the Carnival is greatly encouraging the lack of the use of that. It's a dead hand. It wants to promulgate, things like, everybody's going to be thrown into a FEMA camp next week, or, like potential threats, but, never on real threats, never on people getting set up by the cops and thrown in prison. And sure as hell, almost not a word is peeped about actual prison conditions or even something that's actually useful in a utilitarian sense, such as how to survive prison. And if you want to look into that, read my book report on Jim Hogshire's You Are Going to Prison. And even if you think Hogshire is wrong about some of the stuff that he says about surviving prison, at least look into it so at least we're broaching the topic. You see, that's the problem I've got with the fucking Carnival, is that they always distract you out of this fucking bullcrap that doesn't mean anything today and even less tomorrow. And instead of actually trying to help people with certain specific problems, scenarios, etc., that can actually really happen, not actually really happen, are happening. In a very cyclical way, too, and are happening right now. Maybe if Antonio, like I mentioned in another article, maybe if Antonio Bueller took self-defense more seriously, he wouldn't have been thrown in jail, because it's actually in the Texas statutes it's actually legal, technically, to resist, these thugs in blue costumes, at least here in Texas, with whatever means necessary, to the degree necessary, for your own safety and happiness. That's kind of amazing for a lot of reasons. Now somebody should also look into at least one of the other states, if not the other 49, if they want to make a big project out of it. But just the Texas example alone is kind of a big deal. But you see, that actually requires like real research. And sometimes it can take a long time to figure out, and sometimes not. That one was actually easier to find. So there are all sorts of things that can be done to really secure all of our liberties, but it takes work. It's not this, glamorous Hollywood-esque thing where you appear as the revolutionary or something. Now, sure, there are going to be times where things are going to be exciting and dangerous, just as they were, with the Irish at the beginning of the last century, or the French during the 40s. But suffice it to say, most of the time it's fairly sober, unless you're in an actual war zone. So, in a lot of it's tense, in a lot of ways, a lot of it's boring. I mean, it's not exactly a thrilling Rambo, rampage to write book reports. It's not exactly fun to try and discern somebody's motives when they're being disruptive in an online discussion forum. It's not totally sexy if you're trying to do an internet radio live stream type thingy, which later then becomes a podcast version, and somebody's being disruptive when they call in. It's not fun when, or kind of like what happened when I used to have my own YouTube channel. It's not fun to realize that most of my video views were only whenever I ventured into making a few videos that were to be perfectly honest, were sensationalistic. Especially police brutality at its finest. which was completely scary and wasn't, and I intended it to be, was completely scary. The music was scary. The images were the most violent snippets of police beating people. Not just the normal police brutality stuff. I was going for the most wretched, gory part. And then even that would just edit it down so it's short to the most gory, precise moments, and then edit a string of those together. And then edit all that together, so it's basically, you know, about a couple minute, you know, gore fest, just the most retching stuff that I could find easily, and then add scary music to it, you know, that's sensation, but and things like that, or anything involving a socioeconomic collapse where the images actually correspond to what people are saying, like the one. Episode of the Alex Jones show where Gerald Celente was, you know, going down his list of things people need to do, and you know, so like buy guns and so you show guys shooting stuff, and then it's done in the context of, you know, the of a full blown socioeconomic collapse. So basically, very sensationalistic video material, and I've done that before. I didn't do many. I only did a few. But what it really showed was, in terms of the view count, which was something, generally speaking, I didn't pay attention to, except with regard to this, it was kind of glaring, because whenever I did real videos that were substantive, sometimes the style was good, sometimes it wasn't, other times it was mediocre. So the style ranged. But the substance was really good, it was solid, you know, with whatever it was about, things I poured my heart and soul into to do as good a job on as possible. And those would only get a couple hundred views. I mean, really pathetic for the most part. And that's fine, because the assumption I was going with is, you know, as long as it helps one other person, then it was worth it. And that's honestly how I think. Same thing with all the articles I write, the podcasts I record, such as this one, and everything else. If it helps one other person, then it was worth it. Really, I honestly think that. Anything more than that is much better than I hoped for. And by the way, the one person it helps for could also be somebody in the future who doesn't even exist yet right now, right now in the present. So, I mean, there's also that kind of time capsule, you know, that kind of delayed effect too. I just have to make the assumption that this is going to be helpful to at least one other person, and hopefully I'm proven correct by that. But yeah, I just, that's what really disturbed me with those video views, is that the viewers were really only interested in sensationalistic garbage, and it was one of the reasons I eventually closed down my YouTube channel, amongst the other reasons that I listed in the last video I ever made. It was just astounding. I mean, it's like, what's the point? They're looking for entertainment. They're not looking for material, either verifiable news or the kind of stuff I'm more interested in, which are like tutorials and that sort of thing, and some philosophical trees and that sort of thing. Things that are actually helpful. You know, that stuff gets thrown by the wayside. And I've noticed, too, that whenever anybody does a tutorial or a philosophical treatise-type thing or whatever, the ones that are successful are the ones that have a certain sensationalistic aspect to them. So that's kind of a common denominator. So the carnival is very enticing. It's very much like the devil. You know, in terms of its initial aesthetics, it's great, it's fantastic, it entices you with everything. But once you get to the heart and beans and bone of the matter, it's absolutely wretched. It's shallow. There's nothing there. It's just simply, you know, the best you could say is that it's basically whining and bitching. There's nothing there that helps you at the end of the day. It's what can I say? It's a distraction. It's the carnival of distractions. And so whining about the 50 millionth, you know, police beating this week does not stop police brutality. I don't care what the libertarians say, such as the guys over at CopBlock, well-meaning as they are. Videotaping cops and putting that up on a video sharing site, again, doesn't have to be YouTube. You know, the other three that I think are the best competitors to YouTube right now are Dailymotion, Vimeo, and LiveLeak. But hey, that's just me. you know, I actually care about free market competition because I know that it does two things. One, it's monetarily beneficial in that it actually keeps prices down because that's how actual markets work, not this Keynesian bullcrap. And two, because of the fact it helps keep prices down, it also helps keeps us free as much as possible. So I just, you know, there's an economic reason and there's a monetary reason. And they really do go hand in hand because economic liberty goes hand in hand very much so with personal or private liberty. And I think both of them together confuse my own personal view on this. Is that I think they fuse naturally into at least natural liberty, if not reciprocal liberty. And if you don't know what I mean by natural and reciprocal liberty, it would behoove you to read the book report I did on David Fisher's book called Albignon's Seed, A-L-B-I-O-N, Albignon's Seed. And you can read the description for those four different kinds of liberty. The contradictory notion of hegemonic liberty versus ordered liberty, which is basically an excuse for statism using moral clout. Reciprocal liberty, which is all based on contract, and natural liberty, which is mainly based on physical defense, let's put it that way. The sheepdog characteristic, or as Nutt and Fancy would call it, the Minuteman prerogative. So that's what it's really coming down to, is, if people want to actually get something done, it's going to require work, and a lot of it's going to be, quote-unquote boring. And I'm sorry, yeah, a lot of it is. At least right now it is. But that's not any reason to not do it. You just have to drop this video. Really, it's a video game mentality. The now generation, too, that I grew up under, where everything's, push button. Everything from the microwave to your entertainment, especially your entertainment, to even some people's types of jobs are all push button. Good quality work takes time. And I think that's something that's been lost on a lot of folks. And so, it is what it is. And don't get me wrong. Like I've said before, there are guys who need to pull that watchdog function and do let us know what the enemy's doing. And there are some people that do it absolutely fantastically great. But then if we're going to abide by the, like, and I've said numerous times before, if we're going to abide by the, division of labor seriously, that should be applied to political activity as well. And of course, for those of you that should know by now, but for those of you who don't, or if you just happen to stumble upon this and you don't know two twits about me, I come from the perspective that just about everything is political. And part of my, hopefully, proof for this is look at the term office politics. And everything that means the power plays involved and that sort of thing, which, of course, does not involve the state government. Not at all. So explain to me how that works. Why is office politics politics outside of the state? But I digress. The point is that the alternative media can really make a go of it, but it's got to be self-correcting, much more so, much more how like the free market is in general. And the cancer's got to be cut out, like I've said before, and you do that by pointing out somebody based on their track record, and then you start ostracizing them. And there are some initial steps that have been done to do this, but it needs to be done more than just a couple individuals or a couple organizations. It's got to become a trend with the majority, I would actually even say at this point, the supermajority of the alternative media, really. And I'm not just talking about stuff like somebody's YouTube comments or something. Video comments. I don't mean stuff like that. I mean somebody who, I mean people who disrupt things, either in an online discussion forum or something else. And so you can start there, because that's a lot easier. But then you need to move more so past that towards actually to some of the Patriot rock stars, really, because some of them really are disruptive and bad and get you focused on fluoridated water all the time. And by the way, Before you think of that of something stupid, I would encourage you to read the other book report I did on Christopher Bryson's The Fluoride Deception, okay? Fluoride is bad. If you don't know that by now, either you're ignorant and just got started, you're ignorant and you haven't gotten around to it yet, or, you should have basically known about this by now. But whining and bitching about the fluoridated water eating holes in your brain is not going to actually stop the fluoridated water from eating holes in your brain. You actually have to do things more than that. And obviously there are certain options available, but that has to be broached on its own effort. And the initial criticism I made in my book report is that going to your local city council and begging the tyrants there, because they are tyrants, they're just the local ones, and begging the tyrants to please be nice to you and take the fluoride out is not going to work. And then I use the example of right here in Austin, Texas, where some of the most vehemently public opposition to public fluoridation has been, and showing that, and so basically it's like under best conditions for this particular type of method, which is going begging the city council government to do something, shows how ineffective it is. So, and kind of like writing your congressman and all the rest of it, you know, unless you're a lobbyist, basically, or, you know, one of those exceptions, which most people aren't, and most political, and virtually all political dissidents basically never are, for the most part. Basically, unless you're bribing these assholes, these parasites on everyone else's wealth, naturally produced wealth, I should add, you're not going to get them to do anything, because they follow... And it really is the investment theory of, I'm trying to think of the exact term, but it's like the investment theory of political parties, whatever the term is. But you can expound upon that to just certain specific government agents. And it really does come down to bribery. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, lobbying is bribery. I'm sorry, taxation is theft. lobbying is bribery, and elections are fraudulent. And I don't mean that to sound like a dissonant version of the Orwellian war is peace, ignorance is strength, and freedom is slavery type thing. I don't mean that, because that was an illustration of doublethink. I mean, these are things that we know are real. Taxation really is that. They really do steal from you. Elections really are fraudulent, like, constantly. It's kind of scary. And which is why voting doesn't work. At least popular electoral voting doesn't work. Let me put it that way. And... The distinction between lobbying and bribery is so minuscule as to be laughable. So, I think really at this point, the discipline of journalism needs to be revitalized, as well as the more scholarly aspects of it, which would, of course, require more activity to be done in the written medium. And that's not to say that audio and video are to be ignored. They're not supposed to be, of course. I mean, they're a great medium and tool that's available right now. But I would say know the limits of what can be done. And also, you know, there's a certain redundancy aspect too. I mean, do you really need to be watching a simulcast of people talking about something that could have easily, or about one guy talking about something that could have easily just been written down? You know, so it can get kind of redundant that way. That's why I have these postscripts, by the way. So it's not just me reading an article, I'm actually adding on to it. Basically ad-libbing it, you know, live, if you will, or as close to it. And aside from editing out a few ums and ahs and, you know, basically basic speech disfluency, generally speaking, this is all raw. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't know, I mean... The alternative media needs to be resurrected, and you do that by ostracizing the carnival of distractions, which ends up destroying it, because they depend on your ignorance, they depend on the worst traits inside you, and they definitely depend on your fear, because there's a lot of fear-mongering. You know, oh my god, the world is going to hell, so buy my latest, you know, survival gadget doodad thing, which is completely overpriced, and best of all, doesn't even help you in what it claims to purport. So, and God help anyone else if they actually do an honest review of any of these products. And that's another function. It's not just book reports that need to be done. We also need to do product reviews. And some more comparison shopping, too. I think a combination of that. And so far, the only guy I'm aware who does it on a regular basis in any real way are, of course, the two guys that come to mind would, of course, be Nut and Fancy and Demcat, both of them vloggers on YouTube.com. And, you know, Nut and Fancy more so in many ways. But Demcat has his fair share, too, don't get me wrong. In fact, a lot of survivalists do, just in general, are kind of a bit of gearheads. And there is the aspect of the whole tactical thing, which, you know what, I'll just say this. You know, holographic sights are nice, but frankly, just give me a scope any day. And, you know what, if the scope's not available, then I'll just have to make do with the iron sights and call it a day. You know, you don't need to focus on the latest type of aerodynamic foregrip or something on that goes under the barrel. I mean, that's just stupid. Or the newest type of pistol grip where they changed the angle of the grip like by 2 degrees and added some polymer, you know, coating on it. It's like, how the what the fuck does that have anything to do with marksmanship? Really? I mean, unless there's a substantive difference that actually would affect the handling, it's not important, and it's an overpriced toy. At least that's how it's coming across as. You know, ARs are expensive as they are just out of the box. You don't need to customize the shit out of them. And, although this may sound strange for some of the other guys, you could also apply the same to a couple Kalashnikovs, too. And so, you know, unless you're going to add a drum mag, I would seriously suggest not updating the or quote-unquote updating or upgrading the shit out of a Kalashnikov. Or, you know, or a Mosin-Nagant, or an SKS, or any of these rifles, or any other type of firearm for that matter. Or hell, even a lot of cars don't need that much upgrading. Maybe you could put a, you know, extra gasoline tank on something or whatever, but you see, that's also where the Carnival Distractions comes into play too, is because, especially when it comes to the survivalists, which now they say, we're called preppers now. I love that one, but anyway. You know, there's very much a focus on gear and trying to get you to buy things, and it really just encourages what someone else called the notion of credit card survivalists, where they buy something, stash it in the closet, and don't actually train with the equipment, which is kind of a key thing. I probably will write an article about it, but suffice it to say, you know, when you're if you decide to go down that particular path, you need to train with your equipment. You know, I don't care if you're a gorilla, a survivalist, or one of the militia dude, you need to train with your equipment. You know, you don't just buy it and stash it in a closet and forget about it and like, oh, I'm now prepared. No, stupid head. You're listening to the carnival and believing that. So the carnival has a lot of lies. The carnival sells you, both figuratively and literally, on these fakey notions that such and such type things are important for you to know or somehow will help you, but it never explained it. Or, you know, another thing they'll do is they'll sell you water filters that claim to filter out fluoride, but then you find out they actually don't because the pore size is wrong. Or the filter material doesn't actually stop it. You know, the fluoride still passes through or whatever the case is. So that's pretty much what I'm getting at. The carnival is a cancer, and it's hurting pretty much everybody who's a political dissident. It doesn't matter which area you're coming from, what your own political philosophy is, what your specific function is, or anything else like that. It's very, very harmful. And so the carnival needs, and like I said last episode, the carnival needs to be destroyed. And I mean that very seriously. It's not going to happen overnight, and it probably will never happen, because it's always playing on those worst aspects of otherwise well-meaning people for that sensationalistic high, as well as a few other things. But, you know, it is what it is. And the carnival is really, for all intents and purposes, it's basically the controlled opposition of the corporate media. It really, really is. Unfortunately, I kind of somewhat hesitate to say that, because controlled opposition means they work for, you know, the bad guys, usually the government or something to that effect. But not everybody in the carnival distractions works for the government. In fact, they're just useful idiots a lot of the time, at least from what I've noticed. But also the carnival distractions is also very dangerous because it spawns a lot of other problems, probably the most noticeable of which would be internal balkanization, you know, infighting, division, if you will. So when I mentioned in the article about having a neutral third-party arbiter, you know, so far the only one, and I covered this on an earlier episode, it was the one I did with Randy Mack, episode 47, You Have Tread on Me, You know, we did cover probably the closest example of a neutral third party arbitrator, which would be the COSCLC, the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, whose entire purpose is really trying to address, well, lots of different things, but some of it would be IB, other ones would be the carnival in general, as needed, you know, that sort of thing. Just because it's, you know, it's fracturing everybody to the point where where it creates a climate where nobody trusts each other and then nothing happens. So we got to reverse that. And what you do is you need to point out and prove the people that are responsible for certain things and then ostracize them, because that's really what it's coming down to. But yeah, I find it funny that because of last episode, people were just saying that I'm bad and I'm awful, but yet they won't go back to episode 60, entitled Mainstream Media, and actually read and actually listen to what I actually said about the mainstream media. So, in terms of criticizing the alternative media, you know, I really would like to try and make a Herculean effort to save as much of the alternative media as possible. And I realize it might be too late, but I figured I might as well give it everything I've got. And the best way I know how to do that is by creating a typology that describes the phenomenon that's already present, vis-a-vis the carnival and IB and the rest of it, so that at least y'all are aware of what it is, as well, in addition, not just stopping there, but in addition, some initial steps that can be taken to at least counteract it. And then, of course, that's going to be an ongoing project, because this is a long-term thing. It just, it is what it is. So, the alternative media can work. It does work in a lot of good regards, but it also needs to be fixed, because it's being besieged by the carnival, which might as well be part of the corporate mainstream media, for all intents and purposes. So, that's really all I've got to say about that subject for the moment. For next episode, we will be examining more dissident methodology by taking a look at security teams with constitutional scholar and Vietnam veteran Gary Hunt. I'm Sleepy Salson. Thanks for listening.